This is Marcia Savage with Information Security Magazine. Welcome to our special Security 7 podcast. Joining us today are winners of this year's Security 7 Award, which honors innovative security practitioners in seven vertical markets. We have Phil Agquilly of Cox Communications, Brian Engel of Temple Inland, Chris Ibsen of the State of Nevada, Nick Mankovich of Philips Healthcare, and Julie Myers of the University of Rochester. Thank you all for being here today. Compliance pressures seem to grow every year for security practitioners. How much does compliance drive security today? Nick, I know that compliance is a big issue for you. Do you want to start on this?
I think because I'm essentially provisioning equipment and systems to other people's IT infrastructures, for me, I can partition it fairly well. I really have to think about how I'm going to provision, what is sort of the average need or the best need, depending on what I want to provision a product with, for the security controls on that. So for me, it's a little easier to partition because I can create a specification for what medical devices should do for in terms of security controls and what the customer organization needs to be warned about they should do. So I can actually build a fairly good compliance system around the provisioning of equipment and systems to other businesses. We've also built compliance since privacy is such a complex area worldwide for a multinational like Philips. We've also found that having a compliance regime where we have a set of internal rules that is a lowest common denominator is the best way to drive a global organization, and at least in the early phases, to show how it matures and how to build good measurable milestones in that maturity for compliance. So we found compliance to be very, very useful.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for the rest of you, do you think that that compliance is a positive and that it increases attention? Or I guess, you know, I've heard some companies start resorting to kind of a checkbox mentality. Any thoughts on that?
Marcia's Chris Ibsen from Nevada. I know that from a state perspective, there are a number of types of compliance that we have to meet, but I think that the movement of FISMA right now is a good one. They're moving a little bit away from the strict compliance model and moving towards understanding of what is the security posture, the continuous monitoring, the continuous testing, and that has been a challenge from a compliance standpoint, FISMA in the past, because of the cost of reaching compliance. As you know, we're somewhat limited in resources, and if we have to apply the majority of our resources towards reaching compliance, it's imperative that compliance makes us more secure, and I think in some cases that is not the case. And we're constantly faced with the challenge of where do we apply resources most effectively to make sure that, A, we meet the guidelines, but then also that we're secure. And I think that's a better question going forward is what are the types of technologies and capabilities do we need to make us secure?
Hey, so I'd like to add to that. This is Phil Agquilly with Cox. You know, there's a 2010 Gartner report that states that we spend too much time protecting custodial data, such as personally identifiable information, PII, through activities such as compliance programs, and not enough time protecting corporate secrets such as, you know, mergers and acquisitions information, product plans, competitive analysis, business forecasts, sales numbers. I think what's really important is, and I'll just put my title out there, right? I'm the Chief Information Security Officer. I think we all need to know what data, what information is important, right? We need to ask ourselves, do we know what our corporate secrets are? Do we know where they're stored? Where that information is transacted, how it's protected. I mean, obviously, we can't ignore protecting custodial data, but I think the Gartner report is a great reminder that we've lost our way because we're probably not protecting what we really need to protect. I mean, of course, custodial data loss is toxic and very public once a breach occurs and maybe costly, but I actually contend that when we lose corporate secrets, it's more likely to be a company killer when we lose those secrets.
I'd like to respond. This is Brian Engel with Temple Inland. You know, what we're going to protect should largely be determined by our companies. I think, you know, Phil, you're right that as the directors of that for our organizations, or the, you know, the chief or whoever, whatever our title might be, is to help our executive management understand what needs to be protected, whether that's our corporate secrets or it's our custodial data. But you know, compliance is not going anywhere, and it's been around a long time. Companies understand, you know, what it means to be compliant, whether it's environmental rules or safety, or a lot of things that have, you know, kind of been entrenched and companies have met that. It just provides that minimum bar. So, you know, the debates about whether we spend too much time on it or not, I think we need to kind of back up a little bit and understand that the compliance initiatives are being driven by people maybe not meeting that minimum bar. And if we want that bar to be what we all believe it should be to protect our information, then maybe we've got to look a little bit more at driving what the compliance mandates specify. We've got a lot of isolated, and you know, we're all from different verticals, so we all have our laundry list of different things that we have to comply with, whatever that might be. There's some things that are commonalities in all of those, and those are the minimum bars that we're trying to reach. But I mean, yeah, we end up spending too much time in kind of checklists and trying to show that we're compliant to something. The output of that may not always be the security that we need to either protect the custodial data or our company secrets. And so, yeah, you know, to debate upon whether or not it's taking too much of our time seems to be kind of a lost effort. It's what do we do to make what we have to do to be compliant, which our companies understand very well and are going to make sure they're, or those are the things that we have to do that are going to be on the top of the list, trying to get those compliance initiatives to take us to the place that they actually should be.
Marcia, this is Chris Ipsen. I want to chime in on something that I heard I thought was really interesting in that last statement, in that compliance typically is created when industries fail or when there's a need, a distinct need that's not being met. As the only vertical that has the capability to develop compliance in the way of laws and guidance, I think that's an important point to grasp, that if we do our job well, then there shouldn't be a need for legislation or for compliance, and it's imperative that as effective custodians of the information that we do a good job with that so that we don't need it. It's a last step requirement.
Anyone have anything else they want to add to that before we move on to the next topic?
Marcia, this is Nick. I think one of the things about compliance is to appreciate that it can be handled, and I'm hearing it in this conversation, at different granularities. To some people, compliance is, you know, a particular law or regulation or policy and the checklist associated. I think the notion of a compliance program, I kind of go back to the liability to a company, a for-profit company, where we're going to be held to a standard by a judge and a jury, ultimately, when something goes very wrong. And so I take a kind of view that comes out of the federal sentencing guidelines that came out of the ethics investigations in the early 90s. But it basically identified areas of compliance that are rather broad. And so I think organizing a program of compliance around that rather than checklists, and those areas are areas like policies, training, roles and responsibilities, expert advisors. You know, they're basically some very basic checkpoints that say you should have activity in all of these areas if you have a serious program to comply with anything. And I think that broader notion of compliance, that it contains issues of monitoring, auditing, disciplinary actions, event management, those are very important to keep in mind. The fine-grained compliance will come, as you know, in your particular vertical, which laws, regulations, policies you need to adhere to. But the broader picture of having all of these activities toward compliance is not just a checklist.
One last thing I'd like to say, this is Brian. I really liked what Chris had to say about, you know, kind of went towards the comment I made about the output. I think he said that, you know, when we do certain things right, then, you know, rather than doing compliance first, it becomes the thing that happens at the end. We just are, as a matter of fact, compliant to the individual things, the criteria, whatever, that comes out of a law. So I thought that was a great point.
Thanks very much, and congratulations once again to all of our 2010 Security 7 honorees. For more podcasts, be sure to check out searchsecurity.com/podcast. I'm Marcia Savage. Thanks for listening.